Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Real Radio, radio established to address life, the most beautiful thing there is. There's nothing like it. I don't know anything like it. If you can get anything like consciousness, like life, the ability to learn, to have an effect on others, to have them have an effect on you, and you don't have to go through the, as they call it, the swings and arrows that we do every day. Hey, hit us up because we would like to get in on that. Other than that, we're doing life day to day, just like everybody else, but we would like to inform you. We would like to entertain you. We would like to confuse you even a little because that's how you learn. So if you're in for that, then you're in for the next 2 hours. I'm coming in as Rashi Johnson Edmond, a co-host who Mr. Lee Vaughn, and he and I have been working Real Radio now. We're about to approach, I do believe, our eighth or ninth year, or maybe even tenth. That time flies that quickly, listeners. It really does. So every Saturday we come with either a guest or information from our own lives that has made an impact enough that we think it warrants a conversation. Or we come with, I'm sorry, apparently I live in a war zone. Or we come with actionable information that you can use in your everyday life that should improve or make, or at least better inform you about choices and decisions that you now have to make. One of the things I wanted to discuss with you today is, I apologize. One of the discussions I would like to have today is surrounding one of our most recent, sadly, I don't mean to lead with this, but one of our most recent mass murders. We have, apparently something really major has happened in the community behind me. and there's quite a bit of emergency crew rushing to the scene. We have a new mass murder, but it's a family annihilation murder. And two of the people that were killed were just around, just in the wrong, technically wrong place, wrong time, or affiliated with the family. And so I wanted to make sure that our listeners today were looking and doing a field touch with their loved ones to make sure that they didn't have any silent resentment, silent stressors. One family member is undergoing, and they're not sharing it or feeling like they have the opportunity to share fully with their family, and it builds up the kind of stress that would make them that would inflame their whatever mental illness that they already have, and quite possibly make them a danger to themselves and others. And some of that, I honestly don't think can be helped, but some can with keeping in tune with your family and being in touch with how everyday stresses of life, you know, how these, it is affecting your family members and whether or not they feel that pressure and stress to where they want to hurt themselves or hurt others. This is what I would like for us to try to learn from these horrible acts. Some, you, it's hard to, you know the stressors came from beyond a knowable place. But I do feel with family annihilation type mass events, some of that can be at least foreseen with just a little bit more time and attention spent to those individuals who you feel like are really bearing the weight and the stress of life. All right, well, I'm here on the mic with you awaiting my brother Lee. He's getting some tech stuff handled there in the background, serving two masters, no worries. I do believe our brother Rodney will be on quite possibly later on today. And if I'm reading this right, I'm not here alone. I do have someone here with me. Cousin Vic, are you there?
What's up, cuz? I'm here.
I'm not out here in the ocean alone. I do have a sage here with me. Cousin Vic, it has been too long, too long. How have you been?
I'm doing well, cuz. It's too long, but right on time, as always. You know what I'm saying? So it's always good to be on the show with you. So, again, I appreciate the tap-in. So I'm here for it.
Are you familiar with this latest family annihilation?
You know, how can I put it? Fortunately, I'm not. You know, hearing those things, they never sit well with me. I tend to kind of be in the moment with the families that that experience these tragedies. But to hear it, you know, it's a situation that reminds me how numb I am to, yeah, you know, these tragedies. So, you know, my heart's definitely going to the heart.
They can be.
What's
yes,
that?
They can. Now, I want to let you know that last annihilation was incident number. Okay, this is how bad we're getting here now, okay? It's number, they don't even have it. They don't list it that way. They have it in the thousands. And just for this year alone, it's taken up like 3 pages, okay? And so we're going to have to start individually. Okay, this is what the Washington Post says, Vic. Okay, you ready? They say it's been over 300 mass shootings in 2022 so far, this far, as of October 1st, because the last one happened on the 29th of September. All right?
Yeah. And again, that's the thing. Like, I'm looking at some more data. Like, even since 2006, there have been 506 mass murders, 2,652 victims have lost their lives due to mass murders.
The site is called Mass Shooting Tracker Site, okay? Check this out. That number I gave you earlier was even wrong. They're saying, as of in Topeka, Kansas, yesterday, okay, there have been 599 shootings, that there are 2.19 shootings per day, that there are 648 killed, and almost and 2,407 people injured this year. This year. What are you doing not to become the next victim? What are you doing so you're not next? Because I want to do what you're doing.
Hey, I don't walk in straight lines. So, I don't walk in straight lines. You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't know. Even the jokes, you know what I'm saying, it tells how disconnected, you know, I am to it, because it's such a normal part of my life. You know, growing up in West Baltimore, being in the military, you know, gun violence in any way, shape, or form is a part of our DNA. You know, so when it's a part of your DNA, you know, it's with you every single day. You morph and you evolve as your DNA evolves. So when it comes down to these stories, I'm so tone deaf to them that, you know, I can make light of it despite the horrific thing that the families are going through. You know, and again, because like these numbers, I had a conversation some years ago when I was in the military with one of my commanders, and he explained, we were having a conversation about, it was right on the heels of a mass shooting, and he was pretty much saying, well, you know, 100 murders a year is okay in the city. Come on, that's never, one murder isn't okay, let alone hundreds in one particular, in any location.
Because there are places that have mass groups of people, but they don't, I mean, the Amish get, I mean, you don't have a whole bunch of dead Amish people.
Right.
I'm saying, and they are the Pennsylvania Dutch are a serious group of people. Don't go to Lansing, Pennsylvania, and think you're not gonna run into a band of them. And they may even have guns, you know, for hunting purposes. But you don't hear about a whole bunch of dead Amish people. You don't even for real hear about a whole bunch of dead Native Americans. And they have them concentrated on reservations, right?
So you asked me a question about, you know, you asked me what do I do to not be a number. And I think I'm very vigilant, number one. And I don't know the situation or, like, the specifics on what happened in this particular case, but surroundings, right? You know, where do I, the areas I frequent, right? The company that I keep, all of those things.
Yeah, that's exactly
very,
it. This particular case, Vic, was a father who decided he was done, okay? And this is one of the things that I'm sensitive to, because I've seen it when, you know, we get mad talking about he deadbeat, he left. Let him leave. Because if not, he come back, clear the house out sometime. You know what I'm saying? This particular case was a Hispanic gentleman who killed his wife, killed his two kids, stepkids, and then the neighbor's kids was there visiting his kids. He killed them too. And so then the police shot him and hurt him and was able to arrest him.
Yeah, so even with that, like, unfortunately, like I said, like, you can't really call certain situations. But in this situation, yeah, you know, this is a breakup, right? And I think that, again, it's weird because you don't want to ever justify someone taking someone else's life. You don't want to have to, you shouldn't even have to explain it, right? But in this situation, this man, again, is not dealing with this breakup the way he should. Part of that and how we treat people in our day-to-day lives impact situations like this. Because, again, we don't know the city. We don't know the long story behind the breakup and the why, right? But I've been through a couple of breakups, and I've seen situations where I've been in situations in these breakups where I was kind of, a little shook about how the outcome might be. And part of
that. Did you say a couple?
Because, look, cuz, don't do that.
You talking about this week? Or you over the last? Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
All right, can we be serious about this?
Yeah, we can.
So, I've been through a breakup or two, and what I've learned is how to exit the relationships gracefully, to not make it messy and volatile on the way out, because on the other end of that relationship, you have a person that may be a ticking time bomb. So handling it, nasty and volatile and without grace might prompt that person on the other end to act out in a way that I'm not expecting. I live in the great state of Texas, right, where everybody's packing. So, and now you don't even have a license to carry anymore, concealed or open. So I don't confronting who I'm dealing with on my day-to-day life. In my day-to-day life, I have to approach everybody gracefully. I have to approach everybody with the old adage, treat them how I want them to treat me. So to answer your question in the long, that's how I try my best to stay from being, put into this category, is that I really try to treat people how I want them to treat me. Do I always, meet the mark? I don't always meet the mark. But if I don't meet the mark, I have enough self-awareness and enough security within myself to say, hey, look, I apologize. And let's build on love.
You hit on something very interesting. You said because everyone's packing, be it you know it or not, you have to approach them differently. I think that's a consequence that a lot of people don't get of having open or concealed carry. I think it's a positive consequence as well. There's some negative consequences, obviously, because, idiots will be idiots. Those who have a very short fuse will always have a very short fuse regardless. But I think a positive consequence is you do take another second to think about how you're going to approach someone, because you don't know if they are armed, if they do have a short fuse, so on and so forth. So you may just wind up with a nicer community because the consequence of not being so is literally dire. And I'm not using that as a point for advocacy of concealed or open carrying a firearm, but I'm just saying I don't think that's a consequence that a lot of people think about. And in situations where it's very difficult to carry, be it concealed or not, I think people are more harsh and brash because they feel like they have a better chance of getting away with something like that. And, the only thing you're going to do is honk a horn. I bring that out specifically because just the other day I'm returning from Royce's funeral, good friend of mine, she passed away. And a young lady was in the right lane. Well, I'm in the left lane. Well, her lane ended. It was a merge point. Her lane ended. Well, she'd gotten that lane trying to get around. Well, traffic continued, and I just so happened to not let her over. She was upset. Why are you mad? You tried to cut me off. I didn't allow it. Now you mad, so you're behind me. And for blocks, she rode her horn. For blocks, she rode her horn. We stopped at stoplight. She's still riding her horn. We stopped at another side. She's still riding her horn. I'm like, yo, are you serious right now? You upset because the move you tried to make was foiled, and you mad. And then some guys.
But
were
is
on
she
the
mad
corner.
Enough to shoot up the scene? Is what we're trying to
well,
figure
she could,
out.
She
we
could,
want
she
to.
Could very, she could very well then. But some guys on the
you
corner.
Know.
Like, why are you riding your horn? And she goes, "He cut me off. How did I cut you off? What part of this equation was I in the wrong? You know, again, you tried to jump over and then jump in front of me. I allowed that not to happen. That's not me being in the wrong. I did nothing wrong. I didn't have to let you over. I did not. It wasn't like there was a huge gap and I sped up in order to keep you from coming. No, I just continued with the flow of traffic. She was wrong. But that was a part. That was a part of the conversation today that I wanted to bring up because I noticed when I was abroad, because you can speak to this. You were in Europe. Rashi, you can speak to this. You've been in Africa. The American concept of space and you being right, you being the primary over any and everybody else is uniquely American. Am I not right in that? Have you not seen where outside of this country it's more of a we move for the betterment of the whole. I think and I move not just for me, but for me and everybody else.
I mean, the best way you can see it is you don't get a lot of Americans sending money to America once they move abroad. But what you gonna see on the 1st and the 15th is a line of people from other nations who make sure that whatever they're doing, they send that money back to some place to make a difference there after whatever they got going here. And so that idea of communal, you know, I don't see them hug each other more. I didn't really see all that. But I did see a lot more money go that way towards keeping those families that they left behind or families that they revisit later on, keeping them stable so that they don't have to feel guilty, I think, in my opinion, about being here in the States and having those family, that their connection and their support being somewhere else. You know what I'm saying, Lee?
But is it only about guilt or is it an understanding that I send that money back, wherever back is, so that not only is their life better, but my life better later on. So come here, get the greatest gift in the world, Social Security. You know what I'm saying? Retire here. Go back to wherever you live to keep that income coming in for the rest of your life. But before you even get to that point, you've established something back at the crib. Be it you send an extra $200, $300, $100 on whatever. You know, that money could be used to start a business, could be used to build a home, furnish a home, whatever, so that when you do decide to sit down, whenever that is, and if you do decide to return back to where you came from, you have something to go back to and you're not starting from scratch. So you can be in a situation where if you own something here or if you rent something, it doesn't matter. You can either sell it and take all that, and that's a windfall for you, or you can sell it, take that, keep that windfall, to go back with and you know, it could be a huge windfall, meaning if you own something, you sell it, then all that money is boom, obviously, right? Or it could be a small windfall where you put everything on freaking eBay or Angie or whatever, you know, just have a quick fire sale. I need some of that because I'm not, you know, that ain't going to fit on the plane. You know what I mean? So you take that money on, boom, you come back with fat pockets, you come home, you're like, okay, these are all the things that I wanted, needed, thought I wanted, needed, blah, blah, boom, boom, but I've changed my style, I've changed my taste, I want to refine this, I want to refine that, and then you use that money to set that up. So, again, you're not really going in your pockets or Social Security, you're not dipping into that. That money's still coming in untouched, but this money that you now have from selling your furniture, your bike, your three televisions, you know, blah, blah, boom, that's money that you can instantly hit the ground with. Is like, okay, I need this, I need this, I need this, I need this, and I need that. So it even brings you more comfort. So, yeah, I agree with that. But the other thing, and Vic, I'll let you get in. You know, I'm at the train station, and I'm like, yo, there are no trash cans here. But there was no trash on the floor. bottles, paper, cardboard, candy wrappers, chip pouches, none of that stuff was all on the floor. It wasn't 6-7 bottles over here, sitting on a ledge or under a bench. Nothing. I'm like, this is the cleanest place I've ever freaking seen. Ain't no damn trash cans around. Then I'm like, why no damn trash cans? Then I was like, ooh, IRA. Used to put bombs in trash cans. It's their way of thinking now. So it's not common to have public trash cans. It's just not a common thing. Not common at all. It's not common to have a lot of public mailboxes because, again, you could put bombs in those boxes. You can put bombs in those trash cans. It's not a common thing. Not at all. There are places with them, but it's just not common. Not common for every fifth or sixth corner to have a mailbox and a trash can. Just not going to happen. Go ahead, cuz. What's up?
Yeah, that got me when I was in Africa. If you don't have a job, you don't have mail. Like, if you can't get, they're not bringing it to, there ain't no address. The street grid is not legit. It hasn't been authorized by city planners, right?
Mm.
You may own the plot of land, cool, but it's connection. The road that goes to that area is where the city stops. So whatever y'all do when y'all get off of that asphalt, that's just, math magic. So you can't get no postman. And if you need to, fill up your water silo, they got to follow you out there because you can't tell them, I'm in the third building from the furniture store or whatever. It's not. When I realized that they didn't have it all mapped out right, I was like, oh, hell no, you can't get no mail. Even if you send mail, there's somebody.
You might not get anything back. I realized quickly that, things wasn't right when we were driving and my man was like, take this right. And I'm like, what right? And we took a right and the car bottomed out because that was actually the foundation of somebody's, that was the old foundation of somebody's house that got torn down for whatever reason. And you just cut through their house, which led down the hill and took you to my man's. So I was like, yo, this is,
wow.
Yo, cuz, I'm telling you, when you want to go, let me know. We'll go to Ghana together. I'm telling you, it was something different, for real. Something different,
actually,
but it was absolutely
lovely. It's actually something I want to do for my 40th, man. It's necessary, but to your point, man, when it comes down to Americans or the Western culture and space, it's kind of contradictive, because when it comes to, how can I put it, when it comes to me overtaking someone else's space, my space is priority.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? I could do wrong to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
For my space and my pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you have to accept my space and you have to accept my vulnerability based off whatever justification I have. But
mm-hmm.
on the flip side of that, what's always confusing to me is we rather struggle individually than to win collectively. And I'm talking about the household is concerned, a conversation
mm-hmm.
that I always have, because when you look at the makeup of our country, right, the cliche or the old term, the melting pot, you have all these different cultures, right? So when I always sit back and look at other cultures, when I look at, and going back to your point as it pertains to sending money back home, I remember in Yale Heights I was walking through the neighborhood one day, and I went up to the apartment complex near the Giant Market. And
mm-hmm.
what I saw was the whole entire apartment complex filled with Asians.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was not one person in this apartment complex that was not Asian. Like, I thought it was
mm-hmm.
like a boarding school or something like that. But
mm-hmm.
so many freaking Asians. So what I learned later on is that they owned the entire apartment complex. So this whole Asian, development, their purpose was to rent to each other low
mm-hmm.
so that
low.
You can profit,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we owned the beauty supply stores in the area. We owned a couple of restaurants. but we live together. So we live together, we move together in unison so that we can send money back to the folks who cannot make it or chose not to come for whatever reason. And they move, again, and they move in that unison. When you look at other countries outside of the Western zones, right, they still practice drilling ceremonies. Why do they practice those traditions and those customs? They practice those traditions and those customs because it always reminds us of how we're supposed to move in unison. And when we move together as a nation, we win as a nation. We look at us being a power based off of our dollar, the power, the strength of our dollar. The
and
strength
military.
Of our dollar is pretty, huh?
And military.
Right. But most Americans don't care about the military part. I'm talking about most Americans. We know that. As far as, you know, being a world power, as far as military dominance. But the average American look at our power based off of the strength of the dollar. But does that matter in an Eastern culture or Eastern country where they're proud of their customs, where they're proud of their traditions? Does the
culture,
dollar
right.
does the dollar really matter? Right? So when it comes down to the space that we don't adhere to or the thought process, it's a cultural defect that we have that, again, that allows us, that makes us, again, contradict that a little bit. Because, again, when it comes down to the space that I want to violate, I want to promote my space in violation of your space. But I will die being an individual and fail instead of sharing the space so we can all win together, if you track what I'm saying.
And when I ask, you know, because I work with children, when I ask them, hey, what was so hard about a collective win? They said, if a collective win, we don't know who won. And I'm like, we won.
Right.
And they like, but it don't make sense. To win is an individual. You win. It's hard. The we win part is very hard, you know, put ingrained in people. Because to win is to be the best at spelling, the fastest at the race, to be able to lift the most, to be able to write the fastest. You understand? To win is to be exceptional above others.
But does that not feed or fuel the culture that we currently see these children falling into, where, you know, and goes back to where I started. This is all about them. You know, a win is a win for everybody. There's no egos. The issue now is everybody's ego is in the damn way. You know what I'm saying? Who cares? True moves are made by people who do not allow their egos to get in the way. Because you just said it, Rashi. If we win, we win. We all win. And we can all win and be happy at that. We can all win and be happy at that. There's nothing wrong with that. So here it is. One of us buys a lottery ticket and we decide to split it five ways. We all won. We all won. We all became multimillionaires off of one gamble. We all won.
And the dude who bought
How are you losing that? Well, you got $50 million and I got $50 million, but I was the one that used my gas to go buy the ticket. Who cares?
Exactly.
You got $50
million
for one run to the store. You got $50 million for one run to the store.
We're
going to
fight
about the match.
We fighting
over vapor. You know, fossil fuel.
Well, it was my penny. My penny you used
right.
to scratch it off.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So that one cent advantage leads to, you know, you think you should get. So my question will always be like, okay, so what do you think you should get? Because you used the gas, what do you think you should get? Because then I can come back and say, well, it was my idea. So my brain power, I get paid for thinking, right? My job consists of I have to think, and that's what I get paid for. So because I use my brain capacity, should I get 15 million more than you? Like, Are we winning
right.
or not? I mean, so
right,
even,
right,
with
right.
this, even with this story about
but
the cutoff.
But that's exactly the parceling
huh?
out the actual parceling out a work per reward ideology. We as a nation do not like people who could potentially have not done all the work that we felt we did to benefit in the way that we feel we should for the work field we did. Is that
right.
is that, that
mind,
a judgment of somebody else's commitment to the mission or judgment of somebody else's dedication, physical dedication to what needed to happen? Yeah, you don't deserve, because even though we're a we, some of we are stupid. I ain't trying to be mean. Some of we are stupid. Some of we are,
no, that's stupid.
You
that's
know, are tricky. Some of we are incapable of conceiving of what we was up to. When we win, we surprise some of we because they didn't even know what the hell we was up to.
But I mean, even in your story, Lee, with the cutoff, that lady felt like
right.
she worked hard to get in that position that she was in.
Right.
So instead of merging, right, you're talking about the difference of a car length that she
mm-hmm.
tripped over. Instead of her mm-hmm. just falling in behind you, right, and
mm-hmm.
merging, she decided to push ahead of you. So because she worked
mm-hmm.
hard to push ahead of you, she felt entitled to that space, even though the law mm. and the rules of the land dictate something different. The flow of traffic dictates something
correct.
Different. She chose
mm-hmm.
to, because she used her energy, right? Her, her
mm-hmm.
heart rate probably intensified. Her brain was probably like, I wish he would do this, right? And
right, 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 right.
She didn't win, and she didn't win in her space. She tried to disrupt the flow of traffic, right? And not win
mm-hmm.
like everybody else. And she got upset. Like, those are like the smaller examples of the bigger picture that we all deal with every day as a nation, in a sense that instead of us moving, in unison, we want to push our way. And again, like, we want to fuss over semantics. Instead of us just winning together, we want to fuss over, again, who RPMs were greater in this flow of traffic.
Yeah. What did you do for the struggle? What? And I'm and I hate. I realize now. Hey, brother, you talking about me? Vic? I don't come to me talking about you care about black people if you don't have your hand in the game. What did you do? Who? Where are you in? Is you taking care of an old black lady or some little black kids? Or did you? What do you do? Because it just existing ain't enough, in my opinion. So I hear you. I got some of that in me. Some of that. So, what did you do to get the reward of being one of the conscious or one of the ones that call themselves helping? What did you do?
Right. So my thing for that would be like, well, what if? Okay, I might not be in the fight like you, right? But if I'm representing my blackness properly, right, I'm part of the fight as well. Because part of the fight is dispelling the notion that black people are ignorant, right? Black people don't have the capacity to be X, Y, Z. So if I'm out there, if I'm going to school and I'm becoming, an attorney, or if I'm going to, medical school and I'm becoming a doctor, I'm fighting the fight by dispelling the notion that we can't do certain things, right? Like, again, the military. You have different jobs in the military. You got infantry down to admin. You need all of those elements of the military to win. If the admin stuff is not taken care of, the orders don't get cut properly, money don't get funded appropriately, travel is impacted by it, the military can't move, the infantry can't get to where they need to get to execute their end of the battle. So even in the fight for, our culture and the fight for, again, protecting our blackness, we need everybody doing their role or executing that role properly in order to, win the war against our blackness.
So I hear
speaking
you saying,
of the culture.
Part of our we is recognizing that, no, we will not all be Cornel West's or Stevie Wonder's or whatever,
mm-hmm.
whoever you think is really laying down superb examples on a grand scale. Some of us will just be, you know, Leon, the custodian who
exactly.
does not hurt the kids. You understand? But that's his job in we. He don't hurt the kids. And he's a nice black guy to try to keep the building clean. That's all he would have to do. And we need to acknowledge
exactly.
him as much as we acknowledge in Ta-Nehisi Coates or you know, Barack Obama. For all of them are part of this collective we, no matter how big or small their task of we.
Exactly.
Speaking of the culture, though, isn't this a moment that we can bring up DJ Academics? Because he went off about the founders of hip-hop saying how they looking dusty and they really didn't contribute much. So, you know, he doesn't listen to them. And MC Shan had some choice words. Yeah. MC Shan has some choice words, as MC Shan choose to do. But I think LL's approach is better. LL, you know, came forward with his words, and, you know, it went something to the effect of, you know, just because cats didn't formulate a good business plan or weren't able to formulate a good business plan, it does not mean that they did not have an impact on this culture. And, you know, I've been dying for years, and I'm this makes me want to work even more. I've been dying for years to get some sisters on that were pioneering MCs to have a show with them, because, you know, for the most part, men have gotten their just deserves, and women are starting to get some of that. You know, I think the biggest was probably Missy, Lil' Kim, you know, The Brat obviously signed a hell of a deal. MC Light ain't broke by no stretch of the imagination, but she had to really step out of hip-hop to really not keep herself afloat in acting, hosting, so on and so forth. Megan Thee Stallion obviously is making a nice check. Your girl, Nikki, is getting broke off. What's the other sister? What's the other sister? Cardi B, you know what I'm saying? Blah, blah, blah. And you know, it's really changed now because you get money from influencing, you get money from Instagram, the book, blah, 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 boom. But still, I would love to talk to some of these ladies and just have a conversation about those trials, tribulations, and, you know, not the Roxanne Shantays, because Roxanne Shanté is in that category, but she's not kind of in that category, if that makes any sense, because Roxanne is a pretty well-known name. I'm talking about some other cats. You know, there's a line in one of the Tribe songs, You Got the Vibes, when Fife says, a piece to MC Trouble. That was my baby mother. Really hurt my heart when she passed away, because I was married to Light first, but I was like, I divorced Light to get married to MC Trouble. And, you know, when she passed away, I was really devastated. I'm not even going to lie about that. Like, that really, every time I think about that, I'm like, dang, she had such a great, promising career in my eyes. And I really thought she was going to really hit and take female MCs to the next level. And, you know, man, I tell you, life is a fickle thing. You got it one day and it's gone the next. So, but I would love to run across Rage, and it's something else to that. Like, I actually had a chance to meet her back in the day when she like first hit, and there's a story there. And I don't know if she remembers it, but I would love to see if she even remembered. I think that would be just freaking hilarious. Angie Stone, you know, Angie Stone was a rapper back in the day, and she changed her whole life and went through her trials and tribulations and become a singer. But there's others that I would just love to get some input from and see, you know what I'm saying, their take on what's going on in the game right now, how they think they would have felt right now, and fit right now, and blah, zoom, blah, zoom, blah. You know what I mean? I just think that's a hell of a show to do and a hell of a story to tell. So that's something I'm still pressing on, and I may be able to pull a miracle off now that I'm the more I'm talking about it now, the more I'm thinking about it, and I might be able to pull a miracle off, because I do actually know just a couple people that might be able to help with that one, now that I'm thinking about it for real, for real. But, yeah, man, you know, this concept of me over everybody else is self-destructive. It really is. You know what I mean? Because when we win, everybody wins. It really is. Think about it. So if I'm a business owner and, Rashi, you are a philanthropist, right, and you decide to gift Vic and his crew $1 million. Everybody in this group gets $1 million. But I'm a business owner, and my business caters to whatever him and his crew are into. Does it not profit me when you give something to all of them? And then you get
right,
a tax break because you gave your money away.
The money is meant to be transacted, right?
Right.
I guess what my concern has always been, because you must not have had enough of them group projects in school. Y'all don't remember the group project? I was the ones doing y'all's work, huh? Y'all understand how group projects, y'all have not had a group, okay, y'all military, so y'all get group project. It wasn't one stormer in the Desert Storm, right? They didn't send
right.
one dude. So, okay, y'all get group project, but it's almost they force it on you. They break your character down and rebuild you as a group. The point of the military is to reshape your individual character and make you, you know, military issue as a group of individuals, a platoon or a battalion or armada or whatever the hell they call it, squad, troop, whatever y'all call it. Out here in the world.
Did you say armada?
She did.
Did you say
armada? I was
thinking
about that. I'm like, damn, he saw it.
We got to take over the earth. She got
a
whole armada going on. You
know? I think big, okay. But here, okay, think about, other than the group project in school, where do we force each other to band together? They kind of get you in there when you go to church. You either going to believe or you're going to get the hell up out of here, right? But where else do they force you to become a troop or, you know?
In tragedy, we're so reactive as a people, the only time we band together is in tragedy. Think about it, right? Of course, even when it comes down to the family, especially the black family, we joke about the only time we see each other is at a funeral. But it's the truth, right? We don't talk to each other on a regular. We don't come together and congregate as a family on a regular. The time you'll see the majority of your family in one setting on average is at a funeral. Family reunions don't even really exist no more. I remember growing up, every year we had a family reunion for my grandma, my mother's side of the family. Every year. Over time, those things went away. Now you might get one every 5 years, every 10 years.
Right, because let me tell you. So, you know, it was another one this year on your father's side of the family, right? So I saw Cousin Doll 2 days ago, 2-3 days ago. And she was like, did you go to the family? I was like, no, actually, I was out of town. You know what I'm saying? She was like, I didn't go either, but your mother said it was nothing like it used to be. Like, it was just like a get-together. Like, nobody really came. And you know, look, there are social strains on that, right? We got to earn money. So, you know, as today, I'm serving two masses. There's a lot of people out here that are working hard. But then you add in other things where, you know, as you said, family just ain't family like it used to. And there's a number of reasons for that. Jobs are moving, so it gives people an opportunity to move away from the home base. Folks are looking forward, I think, earlier versus later on in life to retirement, so they're looking to get away from their home base. You know, people are just trying to get away from their home base for whatever reason. You know, I am ready to leave the Northern Corridor, you know what I'm saying, Northeastern Corridor. I'm ready to leave. I've said it clearly. I really want to go west, but if that doesn't work, then sort of, kind of, in a way, maybe go, and I'm saying this on purpose the way I'm saying it, sort of, kind of, in a way, maybe go southeast, but that's, like, about it. I ain't trying to go too far south because that's just not me. You know what I'm saying? Like, one of my kids was saying to me, he's like, yo, you know, the thing about living up here, Dad, is, like, you know, there's always something to do. And I was like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I enjoyed the South for what it was. It was a nice change of pace, but I don't know if I could live like that every day where, you know, 8, 9, 10 o'clock, mostly everything around you is closed and it's like, okay, just figure it out. You know what I mean? And not that that's not here, because it is here, but there's so much other stuff that stays open that, like, that's nothing. Like, what I found down South was, no, really, 8, 9, 10 o'clock, everything closed. Like, no, for real. Like, for real,
yeah,
for real.
That's like,
you might get a 7-Eleven. You might get a 7-Eleven CVS.
You can drag
Walgreens,
you
but
can
that's
drag
it.
Race
right.
To Kansas City.
Oh, my
at,
God.
At 11
Yo,
o'clock,
in,
you can do pedal to the metal in Kansas City.
I was in Charlotte on a Friday, and it was like 8 o'clock, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm starving. I think I just landed at something. This was some years ago. I just landed at something, and I was like, oh, I'm starving like Marvin. I'm, you know, I whip out the phone, like, food near me, and I'm like, yo, like, what? I mean, the choices were horrible. Everything that I really wanted to go to, closed. I'm like, yo, it's 8 o'clock. Or it was closing soon. Like, yo, it's 8 o'clock. By the time I get to the rental whip, by the time I get out the air, it's going to be like, nah, are you serious? All this crap is closing soon. Well, it's already closed. Like, y'all kidding me? What y'all do down this mug? And then you wonder why old cat's got like 17, 18 babies. Ain't nothing to do. Ain't nothing to do. What else is there to do? You know, gosh, you've been in Texas for a little while. How many kids have you had since you've been in Texas? Anyhow.
You didn't ask for
yeah,
drink.
So I'm just saying.
You get up and yeah. You go drink. You know, the nighttime
right.
is for alcoholics. And so if you don't want to roll and drink that corn water, you need to get your ass in the house because they out there getting drunk.
Yeah, I've been in Texas for 10 years, man, and it still amazes me because I'm going through it. I went through it this week. I've been burning the midnight oil every day this week. So I've been getting in a house or getting settled around 9:30. Missed dinner. Every day this week, missed dinner, baby had lunch. So, like you said, I'm on my phone, like, food near me, and it's like, closes soon. I'm like, okay, I got to, but like,
right.
10 o'clock. No, closes
right.
soon,
no.
10 o'clock.
Right.
So,
right.
I'm struggling. So, I don't eat McDonald's anymore. I don't eat Burger King anymore. But
right.
I'm like, okay, gee, like, I got to get something to eat, right? The grocery
right.
store is closing. So, I got to get McDonald's. I got to get a fish sandwich
right.
from McDonald's, you know, man. So that's been my go-to is getting a fish sandwich whenever I'm hungry at night because I'm missing everything else. So I really have to plan my day around, okay, I got to make sure I at least stop and go get something to eat, you know, and even if I don't eat it right now, you know, when I get hungry, I can go ahead and eat it later. But it's definitely, something that I have not gotten used to. And I understand the move. I've thought about moving back up north for that accessibility, right, and for that availability of options. But it's just something about
ain't not like it, bro.
It's something about the peace down here. And again,
I agree with
we
that.
Talk about you know, so we talk about the space, right?
I agree with that.
With the space that I have here. Hold on, man, get out of here. What's up? Say hi. Say hi.
Hi.
Hey,
hi.
Good morning. What's up, guys? See, that's how you integrate the kids to the show. But no. And look, I don't take away from that. But let me get this in because I only got a couple minutes. I ain't back. I want to get into two things. First off, I definitely agree with that. When you're young, do it. But when you get older, you need to get into a city. You need to get someplace that has services because the older you get, and I'm telling you, cuz you ain't cracked that 40 yet. Once you turn 40. I know you got some problems now, but once you turn 40, shit gonna start hurting on you. You ain't even know exists. Like, yo, how does that hurt? Like, the other day, I stood up, and the front half of my left foot, below my
my baby toe. I'm not lying. I'm not exaggerating. I'm like, why is that hurting? Really? What is this?
Left foot.
Like,
below
the left
my
foot
baby
below
toe.
The baby
that's
toe.
Called,
like, what
that
is
called
this?
The gout.
No, that ain't gout. That ain't gout. That ain't gout. I'm like, yo, how is this even hurting right now? Like, this has never hurt in my life. All of a sudden, for real, I'm getting old. You know what I'm saying? But no, seriously, like, you need a place where you have services and, you know, you can, and mobility, because the further away you go, or, you know, that really becomes an issue. You know what I'm saying? So I definitely advocate for that. But I wanted to hit on this before I left. And I'll still be running the board. I'll just be in the background. And Rodney said he'll come on as well. They just hit the first stop. So he'll be able to speak on a couple of things once that gets settled and stuff. So he'll be on too. He's listening right now. This Ukraine, the Russia annexation of more portions of the Ukraine is a problem. And let me explain this to you all. Russia is posturing itself to where they know what they're doing is wrong, but they're willing to put their people in harm's way no matter what. The question is, are we willing to back Ukraine to get them out of there, period? Now, there's another package on the floor right now that is additional missiles and other munitions and weaponry that Ukraine has been very successful in using. You know, Roddy and I spoke about this several times. On air and off air, you know, we thought this thing was going to be over in 3 weeks. It's been almost a year. Like, nobody thought that this is going to be going on this dang along. And the fact that the Ukrainians are pushing the Russians out, they're pushing them back. Yo, the fact that, you know, Russia, you asked the question, like, why do you want to talk about Russia? The fact that Putin had to put together a decree to institute the draft and be like, yo, you going to war. We don't care. Like, yeah, you. Not you, but you. You know, to be able just to, they're putting people in uniform with guns, like, you go fight. And if you don't go fight, then we're going to kill you. That's not good. Not only does that mean that they're getting their asses kicked, that also means that the morale of the troops is really low. You know what I'm saying? When you got to snatch a joker off the street, you know, you could be at the Starbucks. Yeah, let me get that latte. Oh, no. That comes with a 2-year service in the military. Congratulations. It's on us. See ya. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not a game. This is a problem. This is a huge problem. This ain't one of them little one-offs. No, this is huge, dog. This is really huge because, you know, on the other side of the globe, China is still doing what it's doing. China's still mechanizing its military. China is still weaponizing small islands and building out bunkers and yada, yada, yada. This, I've been saying it for years. The world is preparing for war, and we are playing. We are acting like this thing ain't about to pop off. It's about to pop off. When Germany sees those Russian refineries within the German borders, yeah, that was major. And like, yo, come get it if you want it. It's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. Diplomacy. This thing needs to end it on a good note, not a bad note, because, you know, there's been chatter out of Russia as well about the potential nuclear option on Ukraine. Like, and the United States has clearly said, if you do that, it's going to be a problem. Like, for real, a problem. Not we talking problem. Like, no, we going to for real have a problem with you. They don't want that smoke. You can clearly see that the Russian military is nowhere near what any of us thought it was going to be. Nowhere near. That's why they're getting beat by freaking Ukraine. They don't want that smoke. Putin can't handle that. But he can't back out. He can't back out. He's postured himself for so long as this cunning, smart, strong, virile dude. He can't back out. There's no exit ramp for him right now. Somebody got to find an exit ramp. You know, and I think that as the weeks go by and we get closer to the holidays, especially Christmas, we'll really see what's going to happen. And I say that because I'm not sure what else happens in Russia between now and that time of the year. So I'm not sure if there's a huge celebration, something like that then. But Christmas, going into that new year, I think young folks are going to be like, yo, look, we ain't with it. Like, for real. Like, do what you must, but we ain't with that. And if they don't, if they buckle, or if Putin gets a stronger hold on just the morale of the military, then it could go further, much further than what it is. But you know, this is a serious situation.
One of the biggest issues with their invasion is that as it goes, then the Russians losing physical control over territories that they claimed control over. So like CNN reported that, I guess it started off, Russia had control of 1/5 of Ukraine's territory. And they have like this diagram or this map that pretty much shows since February how much control that they've lost. So now it's pretty much at a stalemate, and then slowly losing more and more control as it goes, as the time goes. But the diagram that they have on CNN is definitely definitely telling, and that explains the sense of urgency that again that Putin has, you know, trying to save face with the posture that he's taken, the bravado that he's displayed, especially in the beginning, because I think the whole world thought that Ukraine was just going to get immediately. It was, again, like you said, 3 weeks tops, right? Some people say less than a week that this war would be over, Russia, you know, Ukraine was just going to fold. But when you talk about that united front that we talked about earlier in the show, we talk about if we move together, how we all win, right? You got boxers, you know, Ukrainian boxers put their gloves down and joining the front lines. You're not going to see that here. You know what I'm saying? But these countries, they love their flag. They honor their flag so much that they're willing to sacrifice and throw away their livelihood to protect their culture, their customs, their traditions, everything that their DNA, they want to put their DNA, they want to protect their families at all costs, that they wouldn't throw away their careers and their lives in the process of doing that.
Well, I'm looking, you know, I'm a map watcher, so I'm looking at the map here, okay? And I've been looking at the area for a while. I want you to put, and please don't make me sound like a sympathizer for Vladimir Putin, but I want you to, but you're a military man, so you'll understand this. It is just smarter for him to create a country border at that river. There's a river, Dnipro. Dnipro. I don't. Of course, I don't speak.
Hey, I'm glad you tried it because I would never try it. But go ahead.
Dnipro. Okay, so there's a natural landform there, right? Right now, the Russian-Ukrainian border is like our border with Mexico. It's weird. It's that it goes up and down. You know, it's not a clear straight line. There's no landform there. It's not like it's a mountain range between us and Mexico, right? So we're arbitrary sometimes with where we're putting down the fence post or whatever, where we're building up our post. Usually a certain distance away from our actual border, we create this man-made border. And when you have that, you have to have the team of people to protect that. And when you start talking about, you know, that region, you got to have a serious team of people because it's not two nations. It's several, you know, it's three nations or four nations kind of squished in over there, Belarus and some other places. So if I were Putin, I would push my nation's line to the edge of the water because it's easier to patrol a waterway than it is a makeshift inland border. Is that, do you hear me, Brother Vic? Cousin Vic?
Yeah, I hear you.
So even if I wasn't trying to necessarily invade the Ukraine, I would still push them back until the border was cleaner, and
right.
I wouldn't have to put all my resources on keeping what's Russia, Russia, and what's Ukraine. We know what's Ukraine. It's on that side of the river. And we know what's Russia. It's everything on this side of the river, not this line that y'all can keep pushing further into Russia if I don't have the manpower to watch. You hear me?
Yeah, and that's what I was ready to say. But the thing about that is, where does it stop, right? Because if you seize control of, you know, the eastern part of Russia, I mean, of Ukraine, what's stopping you from trying to take the central part? And after that, what's stopping you from taking the western part, which in turn will have you in full control of Ukraine? So, again, when you talk about the motivations of military conflict, you know, there's always a reason why. But it's telling, again, when you see since February, they've lost control. So now they're getting desperate. And as they get desperate, as Lee was mentioning, who else is going to – because, again, when you talk about the motivation, it's not just you who's motivated, Russia, right? You got China, like we was talking about earlier. You know, how do they stand to benefit from Russia gaining this control over large portions of Ukraine? How does that fit into the Eastern culture trying to posture against the Western world? How does that play a part? If Russia continues to lose, they get desperate. Then more people come into more nations come into play to help aid in Russia gaining that control. Because again, I think a lot of people assume that Russia was just going to roll over Ukraine and to be done within weeks, heading into 7-8 months, going into a year. They're getting desperate over time. That's why you're seeing these provisions being written up again to institute the draft again. You know, again, desperate times calls for desperate measures, right? So what I'm afraid of, again, and I'm being honest with you, like, we've been at war for over 20 years. I don't care what people want to say, you know, whatever victories we want to claim, we've been at war with terrorism for over 20 years. So to add another conflict is troubling, because at some point we have to understand it's going to hit us. Right, and this is something, like, I don't know if Lee was alluding to this earlier, but when we talk about playing our borders, how are we making sure that we're military ready for whatever comes from the East as it pertains to flexing their muscle on us? And I don't think that we're taking that serious. You know, maybe again, maybe the military. Our military has, you know, of course they are. I'm not going to insult their intelligence. I'm not going to sit here and act like our military is not aware of or preparing, or at least, you know, strategically planning a potential opposition. But I don't know. It is troubling to see how it shifted. I almost would prefer for Ukraine to have been defeated earlier than to be successful. Because now this desperation comes into play. I think it's going to trickle over to us sooner than we think.
Yeah, and listen, one nation don't get to fight one nation no more. Like you said earlier, folks call for their cousins. You know what I'm saying? Folks get to calling for their homies in the streets, their comrades in arms. They call for the people that they share political or, you know, advancement with, whoever they got a loan out with is more than happy to help to protect the interest in the loan they didn't gave them. So,
you don't to just pick your own fight no more. And so when you get ready to go to war, some strategist sits down and say, well, oh boy, over there is where they get all their, you know, what's it called it from. And it's up to you to decide if you want to bother folks, because you're going to be bothering all those folks. All those
right,
people,
so,
you know.
And that's the thing. So it's like you're fighting distant cousins now.
Okay.
You know,
and have you ever been in a cousin fight, Vic? You ever been in a cousin fight?
Unfortunately, I've been in a cousin fight a time or two.
Okay.
But that's what it's like, you know. So you might start off thinking, you know, I got them, you know. So you think you're fighting, you know, the people in front of you, but you know, next thing you know, they send a call, hootie hoo, and next thing you know, you fight.
And they done hootied the wrong who. You never want a hootie hoo, America. That is a guaranteed disaster hootie hoo. That's a horrible hootie hoo. Never hootie the American who. We come with some almost irreconcilable behavior, and we don't leave when you tell us to leave. When America comes to help, we sit there a while. We say we come to make sure it's okay, but when you look up, it's still not quite right.
Yeah,
We do what you call a soft occupation, right? Where you say you come in to help, but you're there so long that you like a guest who done ate up all the good food, you know?
Right. Like, well, what's left for me? You know, I don't know. A lot of that is happening in so many different elements, you know, of our life, you know, Rashi. And one of those things that I see it playing out in is even in the case with Donald Trump, right? When we're talking about startling moves or moves that don't necessarily jive with, you know, with order. I guess what it was on Thursday, it says U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon issued an order overturning the requirements set forth by Special Master Judge Raymond Durie for his review of the documents seized at Mar-a-Lago. Again, just like Russia, and it's crazy how this thing lines up, right? Because during Trump's presidency, you know, he got really buddy-buddy with Putin. And just like Trump, you know, Putin is wrote a check his ass can't cash as it pertains to the invasion of Russia. But when it comes down to the posturing and the over commitment and the overselling of promises that these two gentlemen make, somebody comes in and saves them. And as long as somebody's coming in and saving them, no one is holding these two gentlemen accountable for whatever they're doing. As long as this is happening, it's going to be problematic for the people that's in the way, for the people that's in line or in sight of the steamroll. You know, the actions between these two men and how they're constantly getting saved and, you know, the desperation in the process spells problems for people who think differently.
Yeah, because that's how they're coming at Putin, right? Because they don't come straight step to him. How they doing it is they fall in all his homies. They digging in his hedge fund partners.
Right.
They're digging in his. They digging all up in like old call girls that he used to. He don't even mess with them no more. He on to their daughters. But he finally, you know, they finally making their way. That's how they getting that. They are still so to where they can't even just say, you suck, like kind of like we do. But so now they can't just tell Donald Trump, guess what, you suck. But now they have to dig in Giuliani. They got to dig in Steve Bannon. They got to dig in all these other, you know, sick and twisted minions. And if they can catch one that accidentally slip up, like, oh, boy, did in
menace to society, then now they got them. But it's like they can't just say, hey, you retarded orange bastard, come here, we got you. They can't do it. It's like he works, he has to make other people work inside that you know, sick and twisted behavior spectrum so that he can stay clean, you know?
Right, so think about it, though. Think about why they can't just go directly at him. Think about that. Like, it's one person, right? Singular, individual. You can't just directly go at stuff that he's clearly doing, right? This he's not no freaking megamind where he's, you know, strategically, well, and again, maybe it is strategic, but because whatever he's doing is obviously working for him, right? But he's not doing something astronomically complicated to where it's hard to come at him. This guy, talking about Trump, is openly disobeying every law known to man as it pertains to a citizen and as a politician. And the brass, they can't directly go at him. They have to flank him again and get to him through other tools, like you said, you know, his counterparts, his friends, and catch them slipping and, you know, wiretap their phones. You know, or even,
I'm like, why is y'all sitting up here paying a woman he had got to pee on him 30 years ago to tell some secrets? Don't stop this. Stop it. It makes us, to me, the more far-fetched somebody has to go in order to follow you. It almost makes me say, well, I mean, are we working this hard because he that good, or are we really, do we just hate him this much that we wouldn't have put a lot of time and energy on somebody who may not be right? They ain't wrong. You know, he ain't no Richard Nixon. I mean, he ain't no, who was that who dropped the bomb on them Japanese? He ain't none of them, even though he tried to be. He did try to drop that mother of all bombs on, what's it called? He did drop the mother of all bombs on them. So he tried to get as close as he could to Hiroshima and Nagasaki as we would allow him. The problem I'm saying is, he is not, neither one of these men can be that brilliant because narcissists,
right,
the focus on yourself make it impossible for you to do the, it's called combinatorics. You can't run all the permutations of what's possible because all of what's possible don't center around you, and they have to work from a me point of view. So we can't say it's them because their mental affliction of narcissism stops them from being capable. They just have to have a band of homies. They like to be associated with power, and they're willing to do whatever it is that they can so that they can be the hand in the puppet's ass. You know what I'm saying?
But that's the thing. You have a gang of narcissists trying to come at a narcissist. People like you and I, right, who think on a simpler level, not that we're not intelligent, but we think on a simpler level, like, okay, well, why can't you just do this? But they're like, no, we got to go here, we got to go left, we got to go under, we got to go around. And while they're doing all that, we just take a step forward and step on it, and it stops moving. But when they're doing it, they want to angle it. They got to squat down, take a knee, and they got to observe the tongue licking of the snake. They got to do a whole bunch of other stuff. And all we do is step on the head of the snake.
And this is what they're doing, honestly, Vic. They're looking at where they themselves have got themselves in the soup, you know?
Right.
The way these organizations are set up, you know, the Organization for American Purity. Sounds good, right? Organization, but it's not, you know what I'm saying? The Organization for Child Advocacy. You think, yeah, this sounds like a good organization. But when you start teasing apart the mechanisms of the organization, you see, this is a group you call
when you want to get some kids snatched out of their home and sent somewhere else, they don't even have a real good program to keep the kid in the house. They don't fix the house. They only remove the kid and condemn whoever couldn't, you know, keep up. You start looking at the work of these agencies. So say you you say you a good politician, right, Vic? And a guy came to you. He said he got some money for you for your campaign. And he's from the Urban Renewal Corporation, right?
Urban?
You Urban. Urban is short, is shorthand for, with dog whistle for niggas. Renewal, you down with that? You down with that? And this corporation, that means somebody got a tax number. It can't be shifted. It ain't no RICO. It ain't no Ponzi scheme, right? So you go in and you accept the money. And they give it to both sides, right? Because that's how organizations work. They give money to both sides.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To keep their intrinsic issues met, they give money to both sides, Republican, Democrat. They'll lay some money on the Green Party if they was willing to take it. You go in and you realize that you've got, as a politician, 10 of these cases on your desk where somebody then came and gave all these people a one-week notice. It's time to go. We're about to tear every, you know, your condo down or whatever. You've been in there 5 years, 10 years. You don't have time. There's no money to remove them. There's no severance package, nothing. It's time to go. And they come to you as a politician saying, because it's within your, when you find out that you are part of the group that's getting them put out. Because they didn't, you know, they don't discuss, these organizations don't discuss with these politicians necessarily how they 100% get down, right?
No,
and so when you are trying to surround a man like Trump, right, and you want to say that he done did some shiesty paperwork deals, right, you got to go and check your own storage closet to make sure you don't have a few classified files dancing around in your files. You know what I'm saying?
It's like, I call BS on that, because like even like with somebody like, you know, what's the guy named Brett Favre, right? So Brett Favre got in bid with the former governor of Mississippi. Was that who it was? So he tapped into some funds. So he was allocated some funds to build this volleyball court or this volleyball arena, whatever you want to call it. And all signs point to him knowing that these funds came from pretty much the same thing, you know, pretty much like some urban relief funds, you know, funds dedicated to assisting underprivileged and impoverished youth and families. And again, all the signs show that you knew about it, but when then the crap hit the fan, you had All of a sudden, you're intelligent enough to get these funds, but you're not intelligent enough to research where these funds are coming from. And it's almost safer for you to play stupid and be accused of being or lacking intelligence. But then all the people around you, no one knows that these funds came from this group. So where did the funds of the group go to? Right? That's the game that all of the people play in all these different levels, is if I play stupid, I can deny until the day that I die. But so many people are in bed with these idiots. So many narcissists are involved in the similar activities and similar actions. Again, that's why they had to flank left and right to come at these folks. They can't come at them, like you said before, they can't come at them straightforward.
So the flanking, because it's them trying to find people who ain't bit on the candy. They have to do a domino dance to find somebody who could leverage a fence who ain't already got candy on their mouth.
Or somebody who's ready to flip. Or somebody who's convicted enough to be like, you know what, this was wrong. Let us stand up and do the right thing. I'll take my 1 year probationary sentence
for cooperating with the feds over living with the guilt for the rest of my life that I played a game that I was winning before. I was winning for 20 years stealing this money. And then all of a sudden we got caught, and now I feel convicted. Now I feel like, you know what, it wasn't worth it, especially when you hear how folks are directly affected by your choices. It's one thing to do it and not hear about it, but once you hear about it, it really hit hard. Like, damn, I'm really that messed up, huh? Well, I guess I should probably tell the truth. You know what I'm saying? Like, as long as I didn't hear the effects of it, they're okay. And that's why you have so many Republicans who turn away from the actions of Donald Trump during his presidency and now. Because, again, it's one thing for centuries to get away with stuff, but when you actually start seeing the effects of it, when you actually start hearing the impact of it, then that's when your convictions come through and the human element starts surfacing.
I love it because when I tell you, I love when somebody is unhinged at the head of a subsector where they think, oh, this is so right. And when they finally get to listen to the guy at the top and find out he's crazy, and you have to really decide. You want to know who are true politicians? Republicans, because they knew he was crazy. They just had to decide, Vic. You know what? We going with crazy. Come on. We're going to keep on the train with El Crazo. And those who jump train, I mean, while I respect them more, I really do believe that they deserve. After you get to running that kind of game on the American public, you deserve to be led by a madman. You deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You do not deserve no calm, Christian, Mike Pence-type, conservative. No, y'all deserve an unhinged narcissist so that y'all can see, like you say, what it look like when nobody has the filter, when they don't have the filter to hide the ugly. Well, one of the things I wanted to discuss with you, Vic, is this flooding situation we got going on. We get it every year. This country goes underwater quite a bit, and we still seem to be unable to design this nation in such a way so that we don't get these tragedies, you know, such high casualty numbers from the storms that we know are coming in. Like, they're not getting less. They're getting longer. They stay longer. The rotations in the sea are out there longer. And I'm just of the opinion we calling them because the people who are on the land that gets battled by storms most often are the poor ones. I think we just feeding poor people to storm water. You know what I'm saying, Cousin Vic?
Absolutely. And that's one thing. Again, our world and technology is so great, right? So just to your point, it's interesting how the places that are hit by these tragedies or the folks who are devastated most by these tragedies are lower middle class to, you know, impoverished people. You don't see mansions getting flooded.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. Vic, why we don't ever see no underwater mansion?
Right. You don't see, again, mayoral houses or, you know, the governor's mansion getting destroyed or flooded out by these storms. So I think it's a situation where, again, it's like kind of like pharmaceutical companies. Pharmaceutical companies, they won't make medications that are addictive because the money is there's no money in it. I want you to be addicted to the medication. I want you to go back to the doctors and get more medications prescribed because it affects my bottom line. If you're not addicted and if it actually works the way it's supposed to work, then you're not going to have to come back. You're going to get off of the medication sooner than later.
Because.
And I'm going to leave
all the money. How is all them dead poor people washing up in the water and them having to reconstruct all, you know, having to deal with people begging for loans to reconstruct those? How does that benefit
them that coastline when they know? I mean, wouldn't you just say, won't they just make it government land, right? And just say, back that coastline up.
But, yeah.
Bite the dust on whatever the real estate was supposed to, give them financially, and just cut their losses because they can't keep fishing these houses out the water.
Well, you're asking for people, you're asking for corporations to care. Corporations don't care. They don't have, environmental responsibilities or social responsibilities. They have bottom line
responsibilities. That's why I say the state got to take the land. That's why I say the government just got to straight up.
Most of the government, they're in bed with the companies. You know what I'm saying? So, again, you're asking for the establishment to undo everything that has built them prosperity. You're asking for the establishment to go away from all the practices that have gained them wealth and to care about the average citizen. They don't care. So, no, the government is not going to, and I can't even say, it's not the president. You know what I'm saying? It's not the vice president, whether it's Obama or Trump or whoever, or Biden. It's not the president. So before we even go any further with that, the government isn't the president. We're talking about the local governments because that's where it starts, right? You have to expect for them to actually care. And it's not just going to be one term. This is a multi-term, project or multi-term initiative to overturn or to reshape the way the governments think as it pertains to protecting the average citizen from these disasters. That's not going to happen because, again, typically in places like Florida, the government is directly attached to these bigger companies and these other corporations who benefit from these disasters. And most of these companies and corporations aren't housed in Florida. Most of these companies and corporations are housed in middle America, and they deploy to these areas, get the money, they do their insurance adjusting, and they get the hell out. So I don't think that that's something.
That's it exactly. You can't even barely insure that land because they know if the water don't come and sweep it off from the top, it start building up from the bottom to the house float away. They got the house already built up on stilts, right? Because they know it's coming. So why can't we just stop feeding them to that? We know the storms are coming. We know the storms are coming. We have no we don't have anything as far as a global initiative to stop anything that would make the storms, we're not going to build different in the area. We don't have any anti-storm architecture or city planning, urban planning going on. So we know the storm is coming, and we just, find that land. And we know shifts, and then sell it to some poor people, and then that's just it. That's the end. And then we just keep fishing them out the water every fall. We go and go get them and fish them out the water with floating on their door, and then I didn't really pay attention to it until Katrina. Katrina really, when I saw them on top of their roofs, when I saw the babies. You know what I'm saying, about to starve to death, the milk is floating in the water, and saw black men, I used to laugh at black men, but poor black men with boats. I'm like, where are you going? They going to save people on their roof. You know what I'm saying? They going to use them boats to save people stranded in their houses. And so that's when it really kind of knocked me on my head, where I'm living, is it a storm place? Is it a dangerous place? Not from the other people, from the elements, from the water that we know is coming. Let me tell you.
But Katrina, go ahead.
I am not prepared for the price differential of living in a community that's got all its storm drain and everything updated. Those houses and stuff have a $1,000 per month differential.
So again. Katrina was the best example of community resistance in response to, a natural disaster. Everything that came from Katrina was all the adjustments and the changes that came from Katrina was a direct response of, you know, again, the community banding together and saying, hey, look, this is not okay. So I'm going to see that happening again in Katrina, the way that in New Orleans, the way that it happened with Katrina. But when it comes down to these coastline states, especially the East Coast, some of it, and I'm sitting here getting on the government and I'm getting on, you know, big corporations, but some of it is personal choice as well. And there has to be a certain level of, again, personal responsibility that comes into play when it comes to mind when you're choosing to live in environments like this. I know that Florida, the Florida coastline, is beat up every year, sometimes twice a year, by these storms. Well, guess who ain't moving there? I'm not going to move to that coastline area that I know is a direct site of these storms, just like Tornado Alley. I will not live in Tornado Alley. So just as much as I don't think that, again, and I'm going to pull back a little bit because I don't feel like it's completely the government's responsibility to make my decisions work for me. Like, you don't have to build there. You don't have to buy there. Just because they build it doesn't mean you have to buy. Right? I know that every year this is going to happen. It's not about if. It's about when these storms are going to come.
It's about when. That's right. That's right.
Right? You know it's coming. But you continue. And then some of these folks build there, lose everything, and build again. And
but doesn't
it
that – hold on, cuz. I got to jump in real quick. Isn't that, though, going back to where we started? This is about me. It's about – I know that I can afford it. So regardless of the fact that Mother Nature is going to come through and destroy it, I want to live it because I can afford it. And I want to floss, you know what I'm saying, right, by posting pictures of me living on the waterfront, you know what I'm saying? Again, no matter what, now 3 years later, I'm going to be on the television crying, oh, my God, I can't believe the storm came through and took everything I ever had. My whole life savings, my whole life is just gone. Did you not know that, fool? I mean, you live in a flood zone. You live in Tornado Alley. Duh. It's called Tornado Alley for a reason. It's signs, fool. Tornadoes. Don't move there. What the hell is wrong with y'all? But just because you can doesn't mean you should.
You should. Yeah.
Just because you can does not mean you should. And you going against the entirety of the grain, Mother Nature, just because you can afford it, that's just not smart, family. It's not smart enough. Y'all can say what y'all want to say about the snow. I told you, my cousin, y'all down south, oh, you need to come down here. Nah, cuz, no, I don't. That I will keep my winter because I know that snow going to come. It's going to go. 2-3 days, that shit gone. It's gone. It didn't destroy my house. Ain't nothing flooded out. No. Y'all with that black ice and the hurricanes and tornadoes and this, that, and that. Man, look, I ain't got time, man. My pressure ain't no good. It's been good for me. I'm out.
Yeah,
but
I was about to say
the city's going to pay for this. The city's going to pay for the emergency crew that comes out and fishes them out the water. The city's going to have to pay because, when say, even if I wanted to rebuild my house, right, you're going to have to put go and put the ground back on there because the foundation then slid out with the water. You understand? The city pays when it allows people to put their dwellings in places that they know it's going to get destroyed. So it's a municipal issue. When storms like this become municipal issues, allowing people to stay in their homes so that, you know, you can't stay. If I have to kick your door in, Grandma, you can't stay. I'm tired of people talking about, we're going to put some corrugated steel up and ride it out. You ain't riding out shit. Come on up out of here. You can't stay.
It's a point where the state has to take over that meanness, that individualism. And when you have a situation where the state got to come in on you, then we're not individuals. We need to start thinking as a crew, you know, because they come in.
The state isn't going to take over something. No government is going to take over something we can't benefit from, right? That's my point. So it's like they allow this land to be built on, because they don't have to maintain it. They don't have to, you know, find ways to keep it. Again, they ultimately don't have to maintain it. So you open it up to, you know, private corporations to build it and stuff like that, and then you leave up the person of choice. If you don't buy on the land, if you don't build on the land to buy houses, then the land will be desolate. If it's desolate, then only thing that the tornado or hurricane can come destroy is dirt. Like we're saying, you're choosing to live on this land, live in these zones that is known for natural disasters. Sucks to be you. I'm not going to charge the government again to save me from myself. I'm not going to charge the government to save me from, you know, wanting to floss, like we were saying, wanting to, you know, to stunt and act like I, you know, and show what I have, you know, in these massive houses on, you know, like you said, they got houses built on stilts. House built on stilts? House is built on stilts because you know the tide rises high. Like, come on, and you know what you're doing. So you're making a conscious decision. It's not like you don't know what the hell's going on. Like in Texas, We're not prepared in Texas for the ice storms that came across the last couple of years.
Okay, do it at a micro level, not macro, but micro. So,
yeah.
You got that right. You shouldn't be going at the government, right? Now you have a Republican governor in Texas. You have a Republican governor in Florida, and both of them are like, oh my God, can't believe y'all spending all those money on these disasters. Blah 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 blah. Ice storm hit Texas. First thing they go do. Oh, we need some money. We need to recover from this. Hold on, dog. You the same one that just said you can't believe we spent all this money over here, but now you want your money. DeSantis right now. Oh, this is a time for unity, for us to come together as a nation to help. No. See, what you ain't going to do is take that money, then throw your name up on every daggone sign and remind folk of how you stepped out and rebuilt Florida. No, you didn't. You put your head between your tail. You took your hand, head bowed, hand out. May I have some, please? No, look now. Come on.
No, so check it. So,
this wishy-washy going back and forth crap is some bull crap.
Yeah, so I call BS on that as well, because even with Texas, the Texas government chose not to winterize the oil refineries
right
5 years ago. They made a decision.
Nor federalize their grid. They made a decision not to federalize their grid. So their grid is run by independent contractors. Right.
Yeah, that's another story. Because these damn electricity bills are ridiculous. But you got like 30 damn different countries, and every year their prices go up. It's a mess. But on that situation with the natural disaster, you chose. And this is why the government is responsible for this point to come in and fix it. I'm not going to call him a damn savior. I'm just going to say you fixed what you screwed up. You know what I'm saying? You should have done, right? So for me and most people who are aware of the choices that the government made 5 years ago, we're not clapping you on the back or clapping our hands and patting your back and saying thank you so much, Governor Abbott, for saving us. We're like, yo, this is what you should have done. You know what I'm saying? So in the case, again, of Texas, that government made a choice. So the people went hard at the government because you chose to ignore this. Again, Texas is situated in a place where it's known for, you know, winter disasters, right?
Right.
It's known for, the northern part of Texas is known for, you know, tornadoes.
Tornadoes, right?
Central Texas.
Black ice, right.
Central Texas is not known for that. It's known for, like, some light ice and black ice and stuff like that. But it's not known for the ice that we got, the three inches of ice we got over the last couple of years. So it's understandable for the citizens to not be prepared because it's not known for that. the government knew this was a possibility based off of all the resources, all the people that they paid to advise them. They were aware of the possibilities, and they didn't do anything about it. So that's what makes the Texas government responsible. And folks in Florida, every year, I'm 39 years old now. Every year I've heard about a hurricane, Ian, Deborah, you know, Jason,
right.
Justin, Julian, John, Mark, Matt.
Right, sometimes.
Every year, you know, the
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, L, M, N, O, P.
That name going to be our rule here, okay?
Every year, you know, this joke is coming. One of their family, one of their cousins is coming to jump you. Every year, you know, this is coming, Rashi, and you choose to ignore it. So that's on you, players. That's on you trying to build, you know, on these hilltops and on these beaches. And, you know, it's fun when it's fun. But when it's bad, you know, I'll pray for you.
Say, but Cousin Vic, thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers.
Exactly. I'm sitting here.
But no more,
but no more
government money back. Just thoughts and prayers.
That's it. Yeah, and well, that's all you can do. When you're constantly deciding, again, personal responsibility is something I'm really big on. And unfortunately, in these situations, people lose their lives. But it's hard for me to empathize with, you know, or even sympathize with these folks when you're making a decision. Isn't you? You're not being forced to live here. This isn't the government's neglect for, you know, a zone, right? You're choosing to freaking live here.
This is like going in that goddamn water and knowing I'm sharks in that water. That's why I'm going in that damn water. People are like, yo, you don't go to the beach. Hey, you don't go to the damn water. Look, some sharks ain't got nothing to eat.
Negro,
guess what they're going to eat
now? You can't swim.
I can swim. I really can't swim. I can swim. I ain't going
the
in that
military
damn
water. The military makes you learn how to swim. I do
that's
believe
not true.
They force you out to do.
That's not true.
The military
that is
don't
not
make
true.
You learn how to swim.
Not at all.
What? It's not part
why,
of the
why would
you go through, you
no.
go through drown proofing. You go through a day or three, or 1 to 3 days of drown proofing. That's about it.
Okay, again, I don't know what the hell neither one of y'all talking about because the United States Air Force does not require you to do any of that crap. let you know right now. My day camp did not do that to me at all, did not traumatize me as a kid. So, no, the United States military in all of its iterations does not do that. No, not at all. In the United States Air Force training, what we did was we learned how to eat, sleep. That's about it.
I was trying
to. That's about it. I'm just keeping it real. I'm keeping it real. I know what I did. I knew why I did what I did. I wasn't crazy by no stretch of the imagination. I wanted to be lazy and get benefits. I mean, come on, son. It's the American way.
This is not lazy.
The American way.
Our comrade Rodney is out on these streets. He's back on the mission of feeding the least of these, like the book says we're supposed to. And I just want to do a verbal shout-out to our homie Rodney, to our mentor who's out on his food bus out in Las Vegas. Going stop to stop at different depots and making sure that the people of Vegas are not out here desperately looking for their next meal here in these trying times. All right, Brother Rodney, I just want to let you know.
Brother Barry's on. Brother Barry's on. Good
hey.
Morning, Thomas Barry. What's happening?
You guys, good morning, man. Y'all was having a great conversation about my Southern folk. And I just wanted to point out a couple things. First thing is that the people who suffer the worst are the people who are poor. And we have to always remember in this country, the rich always import the poor into their community so that they can have folks that's going to serve them. And so those are the folks who usually suffer the most. We hear about the rich folks losing their homes and everything else, but the renters are the ones that normally are the who can't afford to get out of town. I lived in Hattiesburg a little bit after Katrina. And I remember talking to the people who were saying, the poor folks who were saying that, hey, you know, these folks with these big houses, they were able to, you know, get helicoptered out. They were able to have security, guard their property. Meanwhile, the poor, they were stuck. You know, they were waiting on government assistance. That's one thing. The other thing that I wanted to point out, too, is that the federal government does have a little bit of responsibility with the lack of infrastructure building that's taken place in this country over the past 70 years. I know that the Republicans are anti-climate control. But when the Democrats are in office, this will be a great time to rebuild the infrastructure to have it match the climate control because, hey, the world is changing. Climate, you know, that climate is part of the problem. You know, we are in a position where the hurricanes are getting more vicious. The tornadoes are getting a lot more dangerous. And we have to build that infrastructure to make sure that the citizens are safe. That's a national security more than anything else to me. But that's just all I wanted to chime in and say.
I am so glad to be amongst this pantheon of thinkers. And Lee, I want to thank you again for creating a space where we can have black thought, literal black thought, black people using their brains, using their logic, because we do that. You know, we do that out here. I am now officially on grandmother duty. And so as much as I would like to contribute, I have my beautiful granddaughter. And so I am going to say that if you have a young person in your life who is within the ages of K through 12 as far as their grade, I need you to turn to them as before the week is out and ask them, what did they learn? What did you learn this week? Because that's the only way, truly, of you keeping tabs on the government's interaction with your baby. Other than that, I love y'all brothers, okay?
Hold on one second. So next week is our 10th anniversary. We've been at this thing for 10 years, and I just wanted to thank everybody for continuing this tradition and helping it become a reality. You know, this was a call some time ago from Rodney. He was like, bro, I'm about to do this internet radio thing. You interested? And I told him flat out no, because I understood how much time it would take and the effort and so on and so forth. And I can attest that everyone here right now has put in that time, and you have a sense of what it takes. You know, it's chaotic at times, but it's a whole lot of fun when it comes together. It's meaningful and impactful in not only our lives, but in the lives of the people that listen week in and week out. And I wanted to thank them as well. But just in case we're not able to get all back together next week, I definitely want to take the time to thank Thomas. I want to thank the time to thank Cuz. You know, both of you have made an impact on the show, and it's definitely been felt, be it when you were here and in your absence, without a doubt. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And again, next week, the official day is October the 6th. Obviously, we will not be on the 6th. We'll actually be on October the 8th. But it's going to be a celebration no matter what, you know what I'm saying? So I'm looking forward to it.
I'm going to bring the shrimp.
I'm definitely hungry. Hey, there you go. Bring that. Who's making a potato salad, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, we're going to get it cracking. We're going to get it cracking. Bring some champagne. Some champagne, you know what I'm saying? I actually had a plan. Let me finish this, right? I actually had a plan to fly us all out. And the goal was to fly us to Florida. But Ian killed that dog. You know what I'm saying? I was going to jet us out for the weekend. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, I was going to drop it. Like, yo, look. I was going to, after the show, my intention was going to be like, yo, look, instead of us doing what we do, let's just all hop on a plane next week, blah, 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 hide down to Fort Lauderdale, hang out, blah, 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 and fly back. Well, obviously, Ian had killed that, so we'll have to reschedule that for a different Spirit, of course, because you know I'm Poe. But anyhow, Ian to kill that for all of us. But hey, there you go, right? I got some points. I can put something on it. But really, man, like, you know, this is an undertaking every week. You know, we go through the hand wrangling. Like, what are we talking about? Where are we going? Boom, boom, boom. Does that make sense? And you know, we pull it off. We freaking pull it off every daggone week. And I cannot be more proud, because I know you got your game to go to. Thank you. Thomas, I know you got the app to go to. Thank you, Rossi. I know you got the baby to go to. Thank you, Rodney. I know you out there feeding the people of Vegas. You know, keep doing what you're doing. Thank you, you know, to the listeners live, later, as we always say. Thank you. We love you, and a damn thing you can do about it. Until next week.
Peace.